What's up, guys? We are back, and it has been a minute. You know, we went on a little hiatus. Hiatus isn't the right word. We were just on vacation. Ryan was more on vacation than I was, but I was at the beach too. My guests didn't want to come on. Everything fell through. But you know what? It's the summer. Nothing really happened. And we're back to talk about all the things that didn't happen. So how was the world,
Ryan? The fake news media was very unfair to us. They're scared to come on the podcast and face the truth of High Street Freaks. Yeah. We're going to do a free speech zone on DJ Burns' house to get him to come back on this podcast.
Yeah, right. to be fair, speaking of the fake news media, we would 100% have Donald Trump on the podcast, right? Like if he
was talking about football, yeah, come on.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Who's the most controversial like Ohio State alum or fan we would have on the, I'm trying to like, are there any like big right wing Ohio State fans besides like
the Wexners?
Yeah, the Wexners. I would not have the Wexners on. Although, I mean, it actually,
no, I mean, I'd have the Wexners on. It'd just be,
well, here's the thing. Yeah,
that'd be real journalism at that point.
Yeah, it'd be real journalism. And also, if we said what we wanted to say, the Wexners, we would be disappeared within a week. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Damn, we need more famous right wing freaks who like our team. We need like an oil billionaire who likes Ohio State.
Oh, man.
What Dan Gilbert is from Michigan State or something like that.
That's what Ohio State's missing. Which is wild. Ohio State is missing a lunatic right wing donor or something like that. Like, come on.
Yeah, because like the Wexners are like right wing in the sense that every capitalist is, but they're not like publicly right wing politics as much. Like, they don't have like a T. Boone Pickens or something like that. Or he's dead, I guess. But yeah. Anyway, it was good. Italy was great, dude. I was in Paris, then Barcelona, then Naples and Salerno. We took day trips to Rome, to Pompeii, and to the Amalfi Coast. So I was living the dream.
Where was the best that like your favorite? I know they're all completely different, but where was your favorite that you ended up?
That's a great question. I think I really love Naples. I don't know how, like you and I haven't traveled together. But you know, like everyone you meet has different preferences in the way they travel, and the kind of place they'd like to go.
Yeah.
And there are different modes to me, right? Like there are times where I just do want to go to the beach and have a beer and chill out and hang out. Mm-hmm. But I also really love going to a new city and exploring it. And I like a city that has a little bit of grit to it. Like I like a dirty city a little bit. Like,
yeah.
I think like that's why I love Buenos Aires in some ways. Like, it's very safe, but it is like grittier. It's not it's not a major European capital.
Which is where you live.
Yeah. So yeah. And it's like Naples felt like I was in like a Latin American city, like I was in Pittsburgh or something like that. Like it felt like, or New Orleans. It felt like a little bit dirty and like you don't
compared to like Paris, which is just like clean.
French New York. Yeah. Like I like a city where you got to be a little. You also might meet a guy who looks like a dirtbag having a cigarette outside the bar, ends up becoming a great friend and like speaks five languages. That's the perfect kind of city for me. So I really love Naples. And it's also like, it's so crazy. Like we went to Salerno too, which is like a smaller city. It's like not very big at all, but they have, it's like where the tomb of the Apostle Matthew's at. And they have like this crazy cathedral. They're just like, it's like there. And they're like, there's a bridge there, which is actually an old Roman aqueduct. They call the Devil's Bridge because in the Middle Ages, it was there so long, they forgot who built it. So people were worried it was like the devil's work who built the bridge. Like, it was like, that's why it's called that.
I love that. We like, just don't have that. Like,
there's just like so much history. It's like, they forgot, like it's there and it's like been forgotten about, or like, it's just so regular to them. They overlook it, but it's like, to us, like every small place you go, like my girlfriend, I was working one day and she had the day off. I was doing like a working vacation in part. And she went to Paestum, which are these like really well-preserved Greek ruins when like Southern Italy was a Greek colony. And it's like these incredibly well-preserved Greek temples in the like this huge field full of like wildflowers where you're looking up and you're surrounded on all sides, these gorgeous mountains. And it's just like, she was like, no one was there. Like I was there at like 2 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon, like right after Easter week, just like a pretty close to national holidays. So that a lot of folks take time to travel, and it was like empty. And she's like, this is insane. I don't know. I, the whole part was amazing. I mean, it was just like the Colosseum was incredible, the Roman Forum, the Duomo in Naples, not like the main one in Florence, but the Naples one is amazing. There's a J.R.R. Tolkien exhibit we went to because apparently he spent time in Italy and loved it there. So they just had a bunch of his like journals and stuff like on display and like yeah. his history and his life. We ate so much fucking food. I ate a couple Michelin places, which I, that is the thing I spend my money on
is eating
my, like, I love to eat at a great restaurant. Mm-hmm. So we went to a couple places. I mean, it was nuts, man. It was so, so cool.
And it's like eating is not ever as expensive as I think it's going to be when I'm eating out too. Like in other countries and stuff, it's, I mean, it is what it should be, but it's not like, I don't know. Even the super nice places are not like the most expensive meal you've ever had. So,
yeah. Like the most I spent in a meal my entire trip there is like $100 a head for me and my girlfriend, maybe 120.
Yeah.
Like
it's, and you were going to like super nice places too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a seafront pasta bar that was like a tasty menu. It was awesome.
Yeah. That's the thing. Included. That's what I realized is like, there especially, you don't really get like the markup of like location or like anything like that, or like the captive audience markup. Like the food is just like largely like just like what it should cost. Like even if you're paying for like a sea view right next to like the coast or something like that, it's like largely just like what it would cost in just like downtown or something like that. So yeah, I appreciate that
we had this. Yeah, the best experience I had was actually Easter Sunday. We were like, we switched cities from Naples to Salerno on Easter Sunday and got there and we were like tired. So we just like laid down and chilled out for a bit. And then we were looking for food and it was like, fuck, it's Easter Sunday. A lot of things are closed.
Yep.
Or like they have, it's like how it is in the States where like, right, you'll have like your big holiday meals. Everyone will eat at like 3:30 or 4 with their family.
Yeah.
And then like eat a massive meal and then go home and like just pass out. But we were walking by this one shop that said it was open, and it was like there was a family sitting down outside. It's like, oh fuck, thank God it's open. And we walked inside and there was like no one there. It was like then the guy who was sitting down with his family was the owner. And we were like, oh, we're so sorry. He's like, No, sit down. And like just fed us with his family. Like
that's awesome.
He just like he's like, what do you want? He likes to have a little bit of English. He's like, what do you want? I was like, dude, bring us anything. Whatever. Like, I don't care. Anything. And he brought out like a really great bruschetta. And then like a buffalo mozzarella with some like prosciutto and salami, and his wife and his sister had both made like these cakes, like I guess like a regional like Easter cake. Like one was like made of like pecorino, and the other one was like a cheesecake kind of, but like it's hard to describe. I don't know, but like they were really incredible. And then like we were talking to his son, who was like this seedy kind of guy, who was like alternating between sitting down to eat and just like smoking cigarettes on his scooter nearby. And
that's peak Italy.
The guy like didn't have a ton of English, but he was telling us he was a former cop in Naples, used to like fight the mafia, and also awesome. That he loves the NYPD, and then he brought out like a New York police badge.
That's so good.
Really funny. But he got, by the time we left, he was hammered. Like he had definitely been drinking before we got there,
the whole day.
He asked me if I want a wine. He asked us if we want a wine, I should say, and we're like, yeah, sure. And his like he gave us a glass of wine, but it was like filled to the brim.
Yeah.
And he charged us for one glass. And I was like, all right, cool. Then I got a second one. And the whole meal was so funny. And then he gave us like a hug and a kiss on the way out. Was like, please come back. Yeah. It was like, dude, I don't know. It was so, the whole experience was so funny. I don't know.
Italians are incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially
if you're in their country.
Path.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was far enough off the beaten path too. They don't get all the tourists like the Amalfi Coast or stuff like that. It's like it is literally the Amalfi Coast, but like not the same level of tourism.
Yeah.
So it was like it was perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how we found a pizza place that was kind of like that. That like we just had to like point because I don't speak a word of Italian. Like I can fake my way through French. I could probably fake a little bit of Spanish, but like I don't speak a word of Italian. And you just kind of have to point and. A lot of the words look familiar, especially on a menu, but
But so you know what worked for me? What's so funny is like Argentine Spanish is so influenced by the Italian immigrants they have that if they didn't speak English, I would just start speaking Spanish, like in the Argentinian accent that I learned it in.
Yep.
And I would get like 80% of the way there. They were like pretty much good with it. And I was like, all right, cool.
Good enough. Yeah. That's hilarious.
But then I got into a couple mistakes where like the turns they did actually speak English, but I was speaking to them in Spanish. And I found out at the end of the meal they were fluent in English and I would have saved myself so much headache.
A lot of
Yeah, it was absurd. Also, so much Maradona shit everywhere
across
the whole, like, that whole area. So people found out I was, like, I lived in Argentina. They were pumped about that. They're like, oh, yeah. It was cool. Yeah, I got, I'll show it to you. I'll show it to you after the show, but I got a shirt. It's like a split Napoli Argentine jersey for Maradona. And I was like, yeah,
that's awesome.
Fuck it.
That's awesome.
But yeah, man, it was great. What's up with the Bucks? What's been going on with the Bucks since I've been gone?
You know, miraculously, we were just talking about this before we started the podcast. Like, not a ton happened in terms of just like events and like newsworthy things while we were gone. And that's like, that's great news. It was a great time for us to just not post a podcast for 2-3 weeks or whatever. So yeah, I guess the most recent stuff, Ohio State could have hired John Calipari. Is that one, that one's funny? Actually, listen, I need a pat on the back here. I texted you. You were one of the few people I texted. I texted a small group of people and was like, listen, this sounds insane, but I'm hearing that John Calipari could be a legitimate option for Ohio State. And that sounded fake to me, but you can vouch that I said that like a month ago.
You did say that. Yes.
And I heard it from somebody who I had never gotten any information from before, but they just kind of threw it at me. And it didn't really pass the smell test to me that I was confident just like sharing that to everybody, because that sounds insane. Obviously
it's a hard thing to want to report.
Maybe I should have just let it fly. Like, I guess that's the sort of thing. And maybe I should have just let it go. I didn't even feel good enough to, like, some things I'll hear and I'll post it on like the boards and stuff like that. That one, I didn't even want to put it on the boards because I felt like I was going to get mocked for that one. But turns out I was completely right. The source was completely right. Ohio State could have hired John Calipari. He wanted to come to Ohio State. He was a legitimate option for Ohio State. Yeah. So I guess that's my L there. I should have told you guys, should have let you guys know, but I had heard that about a month ago. But yeah. So what do you think? Should they have hired John Calipari over Jake Diebler?
Yeah. I mean, I say the answer is like fucking obviously, right? Yeah. Like, it's like, now knowing that it was an option, it's so annoying that we didn't hire him. And look, I get all the arguments. It's not perfect, right? Like, obviously he has fallen off. Clearly, he is like not doing what he was doing a few years ago. They haven't made it past like the second round in a good little bit here.
Yeah.
But if you're Ohio State and you haven't really done anything in a decade, right? Like, you have one notable NBA player. Like, sure, Jayson Tate was a fun story for the Rockets that one season, but like, really all you got is D'Angelo Russell that anyone really knows.
Yeah.
There's other guys who are playing, but not really.
Like, Kade Bates-Diop is there, but
sure. There are guys, who are there, but whatever. And it's like just to have real NBA players from your school, like, he's 65 years old. He's not going to coach for 15 more years.
No.
You might get 5 or 6 years with him. And in those 5 or 6 years, he's going to sign 5 or 6 top 5 classes. You're going to put a dozen guys in the league and in the lottery. You're going to make the tournament every single year. You're relevant again if you do that. Because Ohio State right now is not relevant. You're making and like, you're going to win a conference title or two in the Big Ten. Like, the Big Ten, like, the national stuff with the Big Ten and how they have a problem because they can't win a title is fucking stupid. They've had like 7 teams make the title game in the last 20 years. It's fine. But like, the idea that like the Big Ten is in a flux period right now, like, yeah, Indiana's not doing anything. Michigan's clearly down. Michigan State's at the end of its rope with Izzo. Ohio State's doing nothing. Like, there's a huge power vacuum. Like, it's Purdue's with Matt Painter now, who looks pretty average next year to me. And what? Like, Iowa's good sometimes. Wisconsin's good sometimes. Like, Illinois, like, what are they actually doing in the Big Ten? Like, Calipari would win a conference title the first 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And you'd probably make a Sweet 16 pretty quickly. Like, it's, he also, sorry, I'm just ranting here before
I get
a chance to talk. But my last thing is, like, there's a lot, like, if a coach can still acquire talent, it's not football where the margins are so thin.
Yeah.
There's 15 guys in the roster, right? It's like, if you have a couple lottery players on there,
you're good.
the system is like, it's maybe not going to get you the title game. It's not going. You have to coach well to get to a title game, but you can roll the ball out and win a conference title.
Yep.
And who's to say, like, there are so many great coach people thought were dead and buried because they weren't doing anything for a while. Jim Harbaugh was one of them, right?
Yep.
We've had Jim Harbaugh in that category.
Sometimes you just need to change the scenery.
Exactly. It's happened so many times.
Yep.
I don't know what Arkansas will do with him. It's not like they have the Tyson air giving, like, throwing money at him.
Yeah.
And Arkansas is not Ohio State, and it's in the SEC, which is a better basketball league right now. But
yeah,
it would have been a lot better than fucking Jake Diebler.
Yeah. And there's a reason why he wanted to come to Ohio State too, to be clear too. Like, it's, I think, like, Arkansas is a fine place for him to land, but, like, there's an equal chance. I feel like there is a better chance that it would have worked out at Ohio State than there is that it's going to work out at Arkansas. Maybe that's just like me being higher on Ohio State as a program than maybe I should be. But, like,
yeah,
I feel like there's at least a decent chance that he just goes and, like, parks the bus at Arkansas and doesn't really try. I don't think he would have done that at Ohio State. I feel like he would have known the attention and the alumni base. And, like, I don't think it would have, there would have been a lot more effort at Ohio State. I don't think I am as upset as you are that they didn't end up going for it. But at the same time, I think the people who are saying, like, oh, like, he sucks, like, he's not who he was, like, he's washed, whatever. You know, it's better to get some, like, a rising star or something like that and build a program from the ground up. I think it's a misconception about what Ohio State is as a basketball program, because, like, I know we've talked about this a lot in terms of Ohio State being truly a pretty elite basketball program historically.
Yeah, and top more 25 elite program.
Top 25 program of all time. But at the same time, it is not a program that... It's a program that you want to be fun. It's a program... I'm trying to choose my words carefully here. It's not a program that's perennially going to be a top five program, but it's a program that you want to be fun every year. You want to have a good experience. You want to try something. You want to try new things. You want to have good players that you can root for, have a team that's fun and exciting every year. And I feel like John Calipari would have been the perfect guy for that. He would have been the guy that was going to get you players that were fun to watch on the court every year. And like you said, if you have a team that's that talented, you can roll the ball out and make the tournament, win a conference title. I'm not going to pretend that he has been the best at roster construction the past few years. I mean, I think we're kind of in the era where the transfer portal rules. What'd you say?
Oh, so the one and done is dead also.
Yeah, the one and done's dead. I was going to say where the transfer portal kind of rules all, and teams have built, you know, teams out of veteran players instead of just getting all of these, like, one and done NBA players and building a team out of, like, that doesn't work anymore. Kind of been proven that it doesn't
work. The 2012 Kentucky run won't happen again.
No, it never will. And if it didn't happen this year, I think the people don't really realize just how talented Kentucky's team was this year. Like, that team had six NBA players on it that are going to get drafted, like, this year. There's guys that didn't start that are going to play in the NBA for a long time. So multiple, I think there's probably seven NBA players on that team. So, like, all that to say, I get the reservations. I get why people would not want a guy that couldn't win with seven NBA players. Like, I get that. There's a reason why Kentucky's pushing him out, or isn't going to fight to keep him around. And there's a reason why he could have been fired in the first place. And people are celebrating him going to Arkansas. I think his time had worn thin in Kentucky. I totally get it. But at the same time, like you said, like, that would just be fun, at least, you know, like, even if it doesn't work out, it's fun. I think the one reservation that everybody keeps bringing up is money. He would have been very expensive. He would have been, him plus his staff would have been more than Ohio State is prepared to spend on basketball, which I get from a decision-making standpoint at Ohio State. From a fan point of view, I don't give a shit.
It's not my money. Yeah.
They should have ponied up.
And also, what are you ruining the conference for? What are you, like, destroying all these rivalries and tradition and schedules and all these things for, if it's not the extra money to do shit like this? We're not broke. We're the richest program, the richest athletic department in the country. Yeah. Like, what are we spending the fucking money on? What is it for? We need water slides, the Woody. Like, give me a good basketball coach. Right. I don't give a fuck.
And, like, I don't want to get lost here. I wrote a good bit about this. Like, I like Jake Diebler. I think he's a good coach. And I think, like, in a vacuum, I would have probably been happy with Ohio State ending up as Jake Diebler. And I could have convinced myself to be excited about, like, a young rising star. I don't hate Jake Diebler. That's not the issue. I really like what he did with the team after he took over. Finally, I was having fun rooting for Ohio State, whatever. That's not the issue here. Like, in a vacuum, Jake Diebler's fine. And I think he's a really good fit for Ohio State in a lot of ways too. It's just like the premise of hiring an interim head coach when you were willing to pay $14 million or whatever his buyout was, regardless of what they ended up paying him, they were willing to pay $14 million to get rid of the previous regime, only to a few weeks later decide, actually, we're going to run it back with his top assistant in hopes that we keep all of these players. And it's not even working. They're losing some of them.
Yeah, right. And by the way, like, I wish I could give credit to the original tweeter. Our buddy Will Warren shared a tweet, like, when Diebler was hired, that pointed out that, like, basically Ohio State had some of the worst luck in the country towards the last month of Chris Holtman's tenure, mm-hmm. in terms of open and good shots that didn't fall, yeah. compared to their usual shooting percentage. Like, basically, Diebler was the benefit of a massive regression in shooting, yep. luck that was, like, just going down, and then, like, didn't get the job. In the day, I mean, like, look, he did a great job. We didn't make the tournament. We didn't win the conference. Like, right. It wasn't anything that special you have to be, right. pumped about. Like, it was fun. It was really fun.
It was.
We were engaged the first time. But, like, I wasn't like, oh, fuck. Jake Diebler is, like, not such a known great recruiter for Ohio State or great, like, offensive mind. You're like, oh, I have to have Jake Diebler. It's like, he's pretty good. Yeah, he's good at his job. Is he a stud? I don't know. Like,
yeah. I mean,
it's like someone pointed this out, but hiring Diebler instead of Calipari is almost a one-to-one example of, like, what if you hired Luke Fickell in 2012 instead of Urban Meyer?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's 100% right. Except, I mean, I guess Urban Meyer, it was coming off national championships, like, way sooner than Calipari did, but sure. The logic checks out. But I totally agree with that. And I don't even think that it's like, I think even reducing it to Diebler versus Dusty May, who Michigan ended up hiring, or Calipari, like those aren't even the conversations you should be having. I think, as I pointed out, like, it's not even about Diebler. And people will say this all the time, like, who else would you rather hire? Who else is there? You know, if it's not going to be Diebler, who else is there? Literally every head coach of a mid-major program is more qualified for this role than Jake Diebler is. Like, and again, I'm not trying to hate on Jake Diebler. I like Jake Diebler. But the reality is the dude is completely unqualified. Like, he has no qualifications and no proof of, like, there's no proof of concept here. There's so many things that you just don't know whether or not he's going to be good at in the long run. Like, you just don't. And, like, it's not about comparing Jake Diebler to, like, a Dusty May or, like, a home run hire or something like that, or, like, even John Calipari or something like that. Louisville just hired Pat Kelsey for almost the exact same amount of money that Ohio State is paying Jake Diebler. And Pat Kelsey has, like, 10 plus years of head coaching experience. Jake Diebler has zero. And so, like, it's not about, like the home run candidates. There's dozens of guys who they could have at least brought in for interviews. They could have gone through a whole process and, like, found a guy, and they just wanted to keep, like, I like Jake Diebler. I really hope it works out. I really hope that he ends up being, like, the best coach in Ohio State history. But, like, when the other option for Jake Diebler, like, if he didn't end up at Ohio State, he would have been at Pepperdine. So Ohio State's, like, bidding against Pepperdine for their next head coach. Right. Like, what are we doing here?
It reminds me, like, and the part that concerns me, I guess, obviously this was the first hire under a new AD, under Ross Bjork. I've talked about Ross Bjork's hiring track record in the past. Yeah. It's not good, which is one concern. The second, like, knowing that it's Bjork's first hire and it's not Gene Smith, makes me concerned about the broader, like booster culture at Ohio State. Because obviously they're willing to spend money on players. I get that. They're acquiring talent. But, like, we've seen it in football. We're now seeing it in basketball. There has been a very insular hiring culture the last few years where it's like you're just bringing back guys who've been around Ohio State before. It's like a lot of, like, what the Michigan program looked like under Brady Hoke at football.
Yep.
Where it's like you're hiring these guys who are Ohio guys or whatever, who have this core in the state. And sure, it's nice. Like I think that is valuable in some aspects. I think Ohio is a place where like the there is a really unique identity to it, and the football team, especially, but like the basketball program, whatever. But it's like, how many times have we seen internal promotion to the football program? Like, mm-hmm. how many times have we seen guys like Brian Hartline at OC, who I know wasn't really the OC, but still, or like Kerry Combs at DC, guys being asked to do a job for the first time at Ohio fucking State?
Yeah.
It's not Bowling Green. This is not a job training program. You have the money, the resources, and the prestige to go hire one of the best coaches in the country. And you do not have to settle for this. Maybe it's right. I don't know. Like, they seem to have think they got it right with Ryan Day. I still don't think they did. But, like, you don't have to keep doing this. You can do real searches and hire real coaches. Yeah.
And like, I want to point out, too, like, we are not happy with the process that led us to Ryan Day of just, like, handing it over to the next guy. At least that made sense. Because you were very happy with the infrastructure under Urban Meyer and, frankly, what he did at Ohio State and what he created.
What's the infrastructure under Chris Holtmann? Yeah.
Exactly. And so if you hired, like, hiring a continuation hire made all the sense in the world at the time. Like, if you're ever going to, that was the time to do it. Yeah, and sure. So, like whether or not it worked out in the long run.
Duke's basketball's internal hire made a lot of sense. I get that. Yeah.
Complete sense. And, like, whether or not, like, it ends up being the right move in the long run, I think the very fact that Ohio State had one of the best teams in, frankly, Ohio State history, literally the year after they passed the sticks to Ryan Day, like, proves that, like, the concept was fine. Maybe they didn't get the right guy. Maybe it didn't produce the right candidate, but a continuation hire made sense in that case. What the fuck are you trying to continue from Chris Holtmann? Like, that's my biggest thing, is you decided that, like, you wanted changes to this program. You decided to fire your coach in the middle of the season because he wasn't doing good enough. You decided that you did not want this program to continue, that you wanted to, like, uproot it and to make some change. And then you went with his top assistant. Like, what? It doesn't make sense.
The if you wanted to, like, argue on behalf of the administration, which, you know, neither you nor I are in the business of doing, but if we wanted to do that and play defense for them, you could say Chris Holtmann did get a lot of talent. Like, the Ohio State's recruiting at basketball was good. They got it. They got a lot of good players.
Yep.
They didn't develop them very well, and they didn't have any kind of in-game coaching at all. They had nothing to run. If you think that Jake Diebler was responsible for a lot of that talent acquisition or talent identification, I don't know. I don't follow. I don't have the info to say that. I'm not going to pretend that I do.
I think from what I know, I think that that's a reasonable thing to assume. But I'll let you continue.
So if you think that, and you think that he can hire a better staff for development, or, like, change up the S&C, the shooting coach, or whoever, I don't know what the fuck.
But you'd have no reason to think that. Continue.
No reason to think that, but you have no reason to think that based on what you know about him. If you did think that, and you thought that he was a smarter in-game coach than Holtmann was just, like, not implementing his ideas, or not giving him a voice, that's the argument. Do we know that? Like, do I think that's proven true, what we've seen so far? Not really. I think, like, they were getting the same looks they got throughout most of the season. The shots were just falling the way they had it for the last month, which we already talked about as, like, a regression thing. I don't think there was anything noticeably better about Ohio State, like, having more late game juice when it was a tight game or something like that. Yeah. I don't know. Like,
I think schematically there were some changes. Specifically, Jake Diebler was really good at out of bounds sets in a way that we just never saw from Chris Holtmann. Like, his out of bounds sets were just never good. Maybe that's comparing it to Thad Matta, who's were awesome all the time. But, like, I think, like, there's some, like, things that he did different. Ohio State's defense looked a lot better under him too, which is a direct sign of coaching, like, things like that.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it is reasonable in a sense to think, like, okay, well, he's a better in-game coach and he's a pretty good recruiter. I think those are two things that are reasonable. What you don't know is literally everything else. And you're just hoping. You're hoping that he's really good at building a staff. You're hoping that he's really good at leading a program. You're hoping that he's really good at, like, leading a locker room in the long run. You're hoping he's really good at navigating the transfer portal. You're hoping he's really good at, you know, managing attitudes of players. You're hoping that he's able to navigate the NIL space and all of those things. Like, and, you know, he hasn't proven that. Maybe he's going to be awesome. Maybe he will. I'm not saying that he couldn't be. You're rolling the dice there. But, like, when you could have simply hired a guy who's been doing all of those things and you know what their floor is, at least from another program. And like, I don't know. That's just what bothers me, is you are rolling the dice with Jake Diebler. You are rolling the dice. No matter how you want to look at it, like, you don't know that he can do any of those things. You don't know that he can't. I acknowledge right. that. He hasn't proven that he can't either, but you are rolling the dice with Jake Diebler. So
yeah,
I guess sure. the good and news, like, the good news is he will have a short leash probably. If it comes like 2 years and he's not doing the job, like, they'll just get him out and get somebody else in there. But like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess like, if you look at the last, and let's say so Calipari's 65, right? If you were to think you get six more years of Calipari, you get a conference championship, an Elite Eight, a couple tournament wins, like in other years, and make the tournament every year. That's so much better than what Ohio State's done in a decade.
Pass it off to somebody else. Yeah.
Right. Like with memorable, like with other like players in recruiting, be like, oh, fuck, that guy played Ohio State. He was nice. Like that memory in their head. Who the fuck do people think about for Ohio State basketball now? Like
literally nobody. If you asked, there are not kids that are being recruited by Ohio State that could like point to like a recent good Ohio State basketball player.
Yeah. Bryce Sensabaugh, Malachi Branham. Like those guys aren't dudes. They're NBA rotation players. Maybe.
Yeah. The closest is, like you said, D'Angelo Russell, but he played on a bad Ohio State team that was eliminated in the second round of the tournament under the previous head coach. Like that doesn't count. I don't know. Right. Like that was so long ago at this point. Like that sounds insane because he was around, like he was my class. He was in,
Yeah, me too. I was there.
Yeah. But, yeah, man, I totally agree with you. I think just simply getting players that you want to watch at Ohio State would have been such a win. And again, maybe Jake Diebler can do that. I think they're going to be making a pretty strong push for, God, I don't remember the kid's name. He's like the number three prospect in the 2025 basketball recruiting class. Hold on. I'm pulling it up. Darren Peterson. He's from somewhere in Ohio. He now plays at Huntington Prep in West Virginia. Number three player in the 2025 class. Look for that. I know they're going to go after him really hard. That'd be a big win. You know, if Jake Diebler could pull him in 2025, I'll be in. But I don't know. There's just a lot. But I think that was probably the biggest news that happened while we were gone. And that was pretty recent. Do you have any more basketball talk that you want to add? Or do you want to move on to our next little...
I'm scrolling through the top 100 right now recruiting. There's one kid from Cleveland. I don't know if he's actually from Cleveland, but he plays in Cleveland in the top 100. 6'11 power forward who weighs 195 pounds named Nico Bundolo. Mm. There's a kid from Richmond Heights in Cleveland also, a guard named Dorian Jones. I don't know. Like, yeah, you land two of those three kids, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I know, like, the whole Roddy Gale thing, him being out, that didn't really surprise me at all with Gale kind of entering the transfer portal. I'll say this isn't premium, but I'll say it. I had heard that he was one of the players that was not too happy with Chris Holtmann and was very frustrated and like low-key wanted him fired, in the middle of the season. I don't know if it was to that extent, but he wasn't exactly happy with the head coach situation. And so when Ohio State hired Diebler, I kind of expected, I don't know exactly how he feels about Jake Diebler. I don't know anything about that. He might like Jake Diebler for all I know. But when they hired Jake Diebler, I assumed that maybe he would enter the transfer portal just because they're not making a significant change at head coach. And it's kind of just like the same regime. So that didn't really surprise me. But even them letting him walk, I think, is a sign that they're really going to try to go after Darren Peterson and just open up as much space as possible. They're not going to keep kind of middling guards around when they could kind of make a splash and bring somebody else in. So all that to say, it will be very interesting to see what the program looks like in the next 2 years. And I'm rooting for Jake Diebler. Like, again, I really like him. I think he's a good guy. I think he fits the program really well. He clearly has the support of all the people who really matter within Ohio State basketball. You could see that at kind of like the way people turned up for his press conference. Like, if he succeeds, it'll be great. And he's kind of like an Ohio lifer too. So if he ends up being like the best coach in college basketball and Ohio State got him right off the bat, like that's cool. He can be here for a few decades and he's probably not going to go anywhere else. So I think that's the upside. But again, you're just kind of rolling the dice and hoping that it works out. And I don't really like that process.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. I agree with all of that. Let's talk about football. Before we do that, let's talk about our good friends at Home Field Apparel. Kevin, we know them. We love them. I have a European story about Home Field for you.
Do you?
A very brief one. I do. I was in an alleyway that led to the apartment I was staying at in Salerno, Italy. And I saw a girl wearing a Home Field Pit shirt. And I said, hail to Pitt to her. And she looked at me like I had three fucking heads. So I don't know if it was someone else's shirt she was wearing. If somehow a Home Field shirt already ended up in the vintage bins of Salerno, Italy.
I love that.
Or if she just didn't understand what I said. But Home Field's international, dude. You can wear it. You can confirm. Wear it and look cool in Europe. It's that good.
Yeah. No, straight up. I think maybe you even look cooler in Europe because if you've got, I'm sure you went shopping a little bit in Europe, or at least like saw some places that were selling some shit. Like the way that like we have like the trendy things here, like the, I don't know, like the Barcelona tennis club shirts or something that you'll see at like Abercrombie or something like that. Yeah, they do with America. It'll just be like, I've seen one that was like a baseball on it and it was like American Sport Authority or something like that. Like random shit. And it's like, yeah. So,
and they'll also sell you t-shirts like from Obey at $130, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good. Yeah. So if you want to make a fortune, buy a bunch of Home Field stuff here and go over to Europe and sell it as vintage collegiate apparel from American colleges. And you could probably mark that shit up like 300% and make a killing. And you'd be actually doing a service too, because you'd be giving Europeans the softness of Home Field Apparel. And that's really what they need because they're incredible shirts.
Yeah. The softness, the swag, the style, the pizzazz. It's unreal, dude.
And if you have not ordered from them yet, you can use the code Meet at Midfield to take 15% off your first order. So if you want to load up with like several hundred shirts to just go over and sell in Europe on your European vacation, use the code Meet at Midfield for 15% off your first order. It doesn't work on your third, seventh, 11th, or 18th order, just your first. If you have not taken advantage of that,
Does work on all Prime numbers.
Does it? Yeah.
Yeah. You just have to get to your 17th order and it works again.
So 100% order confirmed. Now.
Yeah.
That would be funny if they coded it in such a way that was like, look, if you ordered 33 different things from us, like it works now, you know?
Just... Yeah. That's great. That'd be cool. There should be like I'm sure they actually do have a rewards program. I kind of forgot about that.
Yeah. That's true.
I actually have enough rewards to get a free shirt my next order from Home Field. So
wow, big time.
So you guys should too. Yeah. Also, if you see a guy who's about 35 years old and looks like vaguely Latino in Barcelona wearing an Ohio State Home Field shirt, that is my friend Fede. You should say hello to him. That's a gift he requested from the United States when I went to visit him. So if you're in Barcelona and you see that guy, say go Bucks, and he'll know what you're talking about. You're a friend of Ryan's.
Damn. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Well, that's Home Field.
Yeah. We're not on our game. Our transitions are fucked. We'll get back into midseason form soon. But the next thing we would like to talk about, Dallin Hayden is gone, which I don't think surprised literally anybody, but we're going to talk about it anyway, because his entire career at Ohio State, which is completely mismanaged. The red shirt last year was just beyond baffling.
So stupid. Yeah.
I think we even like teased on this podcast like several months ago that we were like pretty sure that Dallin Hayden was transferring based on some things that we heard. So we're not at all surprised by this. I don't think anybody should be surprised by this. Like, come on. Like you don't say no to Quinshon Judkins. I get it. And Travion Henderson coming back, you don't say no to that either. But you'd have to be a moron if you're Dallin Hayden to like look at those guys and the way that Ohio State's treated you the past 2 years and be like, yep, I'm running it back one more time. So I completely get it.
Yeah. And it's like, what, you're going to wait for your third year whenever they have like James Peoples in year two, and they're going to sign like three top 200 running backs this year.
And maybe probably a transfer guy again. Like any given year, they could just bring in another guy that's just like Quinshon Judkins. And so if things have not worked out for you this far and you couldn't get on the field when they like desperately needed running backs, like you got to go elsewhere, man. And I get it. Yeah. Like that he's RB3. I think you even said he's RB3 here. But like RB1, it like probably half the power four teams.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of jobs that there you can go get. The one school I've heard, we have a friend of ours, a subscriber to the site, who's actually connected to his family. I don't know if I told you this.
Oh, really?
This is not a premium pod, but I'll drop the premium pill, whatever. I have heard that in the early going to expect Memphis to be the top option. A lot of people said Tennessee for a long time, but
no, it won't be Tennessee.
Tennessee's really into that Dylan Sampson kid. They also have Jalen Wright they like, and a couple guys there who are good, solid running backs. That best case scenario, he's in a three-man committee, and he's like the last one to learn the offense. Yeah. Worst case scenario, he's RB3 again. Like a top 15 program. But yeah, Memphis makes a lot of sense. They have like one solid running back there who's like nothing special. But Memphis runs the fuck out of the football on their good years. So, or at least they also get running backs involved in the passing game, too. The running backs get a lot of touches overall.
They do.
I think the Memphis is a good spot for him. He's from there. And also, here's the thing, too. You're going into year three. Like, he was part of the frustration with Ohio State from him was that he didn't get a good NIL package. Like, he, again, from what I've heard, he viewed it as like an insultingly low NIL package. I get it. I also wouldn't give him that much NIL money. I like Dallin Hayes. He's a good player.
Yeah.
But I don't.
What's really his marketability here? Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't think you're keeping him for year four, which I don't think they would, then why spend on him for year three to be your third running back? Because they're going to get that K'Ron Lynch Adams kid from UMass if they're like running back, the third running back, who's just like a slightly poor man's Mayan Williams, basically.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like, get him instead. It's cheaper. He's from Ohio, whatever. He's more proven. But yeah, like for Dallin Hayden, the NIL money should be a consideration because you obviously want to get paid at some point. However, carries lead to NIL money. And if you're in year three, you're getting into your money years now for the NFL. You need to get carries now. You have to go to a place where you are like, at worst, the 1B running back, but ideally the lead back.
Yeah,
I think Memphis makes sense for that. I think he should look long and hard at App State. I have no sourcing that he will. There's a new like fake Ohio State insider on Twitter who sometimes I mentioned. His name is like Brantford Winstonworth or something like that. I don't know if you've seen this guy around.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to give him pub. Don't follow him. But he's saying Missouri, which doesn't make a lick of fucking sense. They have Marcus Carroll and Nate Noel, who are both formerly the top running back at their G5 school, who transferred to Missouri because Missouri's going to run the ball a lot. Marcus Carroll is very good. Nate Noel has been banged up from injury, but was very good. I think he'll get back to that again when he's healthy. If he goes to Missouri, he will be the third running back again, which is fucking insane. He should not do that and will not do that. His family's smarter than that. There's a lot of schools out there. I'll probably do something. I'll post it on the board like tomorrow or something about some schools I think that make sense for him based on running back fit. I have my whole running back spreadsheet for the year built out, like 96 different backs I've looked up. So I feel like I've got a pretty good handle on who's good and who's where. I think Memphis makes a lot of sense for him, but there's other schools out there too that could fit. I don't think it's like done to Memphis, just like the leader of the clubhouse on day one.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think, like you said, it's just he needs touches. And I think like with running back, even more than a lot of other positions, I think you don't need to go to an elite team to get drafted and to build an NFL career, especially at running back, because it doesn't really relies on having an offensive line. But it's not like you're a receiver where you need a good quarterback throwing to you. Or anything like that. Like you can make money playing anywhere as a running back. You see it in the NFL. Like if you look at where a lot of these guys came from, a lot of the NFL every down backs or whatever, like it's rarely just like the top schools or whatever. So,
Just a couple other ones. I think Vanderbilt makes sense for him.
That'd be a solid spot.
Yeah. I think, I like Georgia Tech's guy. I probably wouldn't go there. I'm trying to think of other just schools in his region he should go to. I think NC State has Jordan Waters now. Duke still has Jaquez Moore. Louisville has guys. Kentucky. It'd be funny if he went to Kentucky and took Chip's job.
That would be really funny.
Louisville has a couple guys. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'd have to think more about it. I don't know if...
I think Memphis makes sense regionally and stuff too. So that's probably what my pick
Memphis
would be.
Or Vanderbilt, or like, I don't know if he has to look outside of home state. Yeah. Like between those two, I don't know how far he has to look. Yeah, I guess we'll see. I mean, there's I would look at Wisconsin too, to be honest. Like they have Ches Malusa, they brought in Tobby Walker, who they're both like just guys. I don't know. Like sorry, I'm just kind of rambling. I'm not talking with much direction here. Damian Martinez just announced he's transferring out of Oregon State. Backfilling his job would be very smart. They have a good O-line every single year.
Yeah.
I would think really hard about saying, hey, Damian Martinez left. I would like 200 carries behind a top 10 offensive line in college football. That'd be nice. Playing a G5 schedule. Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds very smart to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think... Does Indiana have an opening? Yeah, Indiana doesn't have anybody. Indiana would make sense.
Indiana would make sense too.
Yeah. Plenty. I'm sure I could keep naming schools all day. Illinois is another one I would look at. But
yeah.
There's a lot of schools that make sense for him. He could get a good job at. He should land on his feet just fine.
And he should have left, to be clear. Like this is the expected decision, and it makes sense for him to go.
Here's a question I have for you. We both agree that Ohio State fucked up the way they handled him with the red shirt and everything else, and just his carries last year, too. Do you think if they handled it correctly and Quinshon Judd came available and they still took him, is there any role they do keep Hayden even if they did it correctly?
No, I don't think so. I don't think, I mean, honestly, that might even piss him off more.
Yeah, if he had played well. Yeah.
If he'd played well and they still brought in Quinshon Judkins, which Ohio State, to be clear, should have done. Like, there's just no, like, everybody seems to be despite everything that Ohio State and the way that Ohio State's handled in the past 2 years, like, the way that everybody is handling this makes complete sense. Like, he should leave and Ohio State should have brought in Quinshon Judkins. Like, all in all, it's just like, this is just the reality of modern college football that he's out. You know, I don't. Because like there's just no guarantee that he's gonna start even next. Like I see a lot of people that are like, I don't understand why he's leaving because Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins are both gonna be gone after next year and he'll be the clear cut top running back. And it's like, yeah, but will he? Like, what leads you to believe that Ohio State won't just like bring in another transfer portal guy to like pop in there as RB1 or you know, some of the guys that they're recruiting behind him aren't gonna pass him by that. Like I just don't think it's a given. Even if he stays with Ohio State for another year, that he would be starting next year, you know, get the type of carries that he would get this year if he went somewhere else. So it's a smart move. It's a move that makes sense. It's not a surprising move. I completely get it. And it's a move that he should make. So all the best to him. I think he's really good. I wish Ohio State would have played him more the past two seasons, but he was always leaving Ohio State, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, I think we are allowed to and should criticize their process led them to this point. Like they handled him badly.
The result was always going to be the same.
Yeah. But the result was going to be the same, but like still, as always, process over results. Yeah,
exactly. And I think the only way that things would have been different is maybe if Travion Henderson didn't stay. I think that's the only thing that could have been different. Cause I'm still blows my mind that he's back at Ohio State. Doesn't make it lick of sense to me at all that he's back at Ohio State. God bless him for coming back, but that doesn't make sense. If he would have gone to the NFL, I think Dallin Hayden may have been hanging around and split carries with Judkins or whatever. But all that to say, I think that the result, based on how everything played out, he was always going to end up transferring with Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson on the roster. But it is what it is. I don't really have a ton to say about him gone. That's not something that's really going to hurt Ohio State all that much. God willing. I mean, I guess there's a scenario where Judkins and Henderson both go down with injuries and Ohio State doesn't have running backs again. But again, it is what it is.
James Peoples, time to step up. That happens.
Williams
Dixon can't play. I guess they're going to get that Lynch Adams kid too.
That's also true. I forgot about Lynch Adams. Yeah. So
one in, one out. Yeah. So, but it's not great. You know who is fucking great?
I think I know, but I'll let you do it.
Jeremiah Smith, is he the greatest receiver of all time, or is it too early to say that?
Listen, I want to say, I think everybody is, everybody thinks they're getting in really early on the Jeremiah Smith hype by like hyping him up before, like during like his freshman spring practice. I think we both agreed like 2 years ago that he was the best wide receiver prospect since Julio Jones. You can go back and pull the
receipts. I think I said Calvin Johnson. Yeah.
You said Calvin Johnson. I think you did say Calvin Johnson. You might've said ever. You might've said ever off the bat. At some point you dropped an ever. I don't know. Remember exactly where it was, but
yeah, I tweeted that the other day. I said, I think what I said is the standard is already that he's the best receiver prospect since Calvin Johnson, but I'm not afraid to say ever after his first catch in the spring game.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, that's fair. That's fair. But so we were not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but we were telling you guys how good this kid was for like 2 years. Yeah. So
We weren't out on a limb. Everyone, all the recruiting guys knew.
Yeah, that's true. But there was a significant like portion of people that when he like committed to Ohio State, it was like, oh, look, like another 5-star wide receiver. And we were like, no. This is not just another like 5-star wide receiver that's committing to Ohio State. Like this is the guy that you've seen.
People nationally don't get it yet because there's still people. There's a guy, I forget the guy's name. It wasn't Barrett Sally. It was some other ESPN SEC reporter who was saying, like, it's going to be a real battle between Cam Coleman, Ryan Wingo, and Jeremiah Smith to see who's the best receiver prospect in this class. No, it's not. No, like, sorry, respectfully, that's crazy to say about a guy who hasn't played a rep of college football yet. The competition for Jeremiah Smith is where he stacks up to Julio Jones, A.J. Green, Marvin Harrison Jr., Kelvin Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald as pro prospects in the last 30 years.
Yeah.
That and Randy Moss. That is the list of who he's compared to, not
the guys in his class.
Yeah. No. Come on, dude. Be a fucking, like, I like Ryan Wingo a lot. Cam Coleman's fine. People are losing their shit over
Ryan Wingo's awesome.
Ryan Wingo's really good. Cam Coleman's probably pretty good. Like, he might end up being a top 5 receiver in his class, maybe, if it all goes great. Like, I think Ryan Wingo's good. Jeremiah Smith is a different fucking animal. Like, he's the best receiver on this team right now.
Yeah. No, I believe it.
I love Emeka.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's going to be a day one starter. He's going to be wide receiver one right off the bat. Like, he is that good.
Yeah, all this goofy shit about like how you find reps for all these guys, it's not hard. Like, the answer is you play Jeremiah Smith every rep he can physically handle. You play Emeka every snap he can physically handle, and you find reps for Carnell Tate and Brandon Innes as you can. And then if they all get tired, you see how long it takes for someone else to take Jaden Ballard's job. That's as the fifth receiver. That's the question you're answering here is like, how many reps do wide receivers 3 and 4 get against each other? And can Emeka lose any to them? And how many reps does Jaden Ballard end up getting? There's no question about Jeremiah Smith, dude. He is a fucking dog.
And I think, like, as much as we hyped him up, I think that, like, I would go as far as to say that he's better than I expected him to be this early. You know, like even guys who like you have like really high expectations for and stuff like that, like right off the bat, whatever, like there's some ability to like sandbag those expectations, but nobody is even trying to do that. And nobody is even like trying to, like, there's not a soul within Ohio State or anywhere else that's trying to like temper expectations for Jeremiah Smith. And usually you see that with freshmen. Like, you even saw that with like Justin Fields, who was a second year player when they brought him in, like Ryan Day. Maybe that's his thing with quarterbacks or whatever too. Maybe it's different. But like Ryan Day was out there like, you know, like we're just trying to get him consistent. Like, he didn't lose his black stripe for quite a while. He wasn't named the starter for quite a while. Literally anytime somebody asks about Jeremiah Smith, they're like, oh, he's a freak. Like, he is incredible. Like, dude is awesome. Like, there's nobody who's like, I don't know, we've got some really good receivers, we'll see how he develops. Like, everybody you ask is like, yeah, that's like the best wide receiver I've ever seen.
Yeah, like, I mean, how many guys on this roster are like top 50 picks, right? It's like, you're looking at like a couple corners, probably a safety, a linebacker, or two running backs, a couple defensive linemen, all like top 50 picks. And all anyone can talk about is the true freshman Smith. Wide receiver. Yeah. Yeah.
I think the big one for me was when Denzel Burke, before he got there, was like, I don't know, man, like he's a freshman, like, or he's in high school. Like, I want to see what this high schooler does before I'm going to talk anything about him. And then after like two practices, he was like, yeah, man, this kid's a freak. Like, he's awesome, you know? So I think that was the thing that got me. Was, and Denzel Burke's a guy who tells it like it is. Like, he's out there saying like Will Howard, like, not impressed yet, but Jeremiah Smith, he is salivating over. So,
And there's also we're going to talk about quarterbacks in the premium podcast, by the way, to tease that. But there is another black stripe removal there that has, I don't know if you saw Gerd's tweet. We'll talk about it in the premium, but might be cooking there too. I'm getting on the hype train a little bit. But
me too a little bit. We'll talk about that in the premium because I think we're gonna have takes on that one too.
I got some shit to get off my chest. Yeah.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, Jeremiah Smith, Jesus Christ. Like, it's, I don't know, man. Like, every once in a while, you just get to watch a perfect player for their position on your team. And not all of those guys always end up working out in the NFL the way you expect them to. Some of them even get hurt in college. Like, Nick Bosa got hurt in college, right? We can see his full career. It's not always perfect, but this feels, dude, I don't know. Who was the last freshman that we felt like this about? Was like, I don't even think Sonny when he felt this way.
No, is it definitely like not
Joey Bosa? And even, I think this is better. This is bigger than Joey.
I think it was, like, I think Nick was bigger than Joey. The problem was that Nick had, there was a more stacked man, but if Nick couldn't crack that, like that's kind of the same thing. I had a whole thought process in my head and I just like jumped around. So I'll explain it. I was going to say Nick Bosa is the closest comparison I can have in terms of hype versus how good he was. And then I was going to say that the problem with Nick is that he was entering a position group that was really good and he shared a lot of snaps with, you know, like the Tyquan Lewis, and Sam Hubbard and like those guys too. So he didn't really get a ton of play. But I can't say that because Jeremiah Smith is walking into an absolutely loaded wide receiver room and is immediately going to be the best one. So like, to me, that's not even a comparison either, because Nick Bosa didn't play all that much as a true freshman because he couldn't, you know, he wasn't starting over those other three veterans.
Yeah. Like Parrish Johnson, I guess, had some of this, but even then it wasn't like this.
No,
like be talking about Orlando Pace is like the last one.
I would say Terrell Pryor is close.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a good answer.
And maybe to a slightly lesser extent, Braxton Miller.
But even Brax, like obviously when he got out there, had so many stumbling blocks.
He did. Braxton was not like perfect when he got out there. It was just like in terms of just somebody who was clearly ready and like your biggest playmaker is like a true freshman. Like that. Yeah. That's
it took him what, 5 or 6 games to get the job? Like
it's, Yeah. I don't think that was necessarily his fault. I think that was just like,
yeah, it was coaching. Yeah.
I mean, it was what Ohio State was comfortable with at quarterback instead of just like finding a guy who was clearly the best playmaker on the team and being like, oh, fuck it, we'll figure it out. I think that was a different situation. I think Terrell Pryor didn't start his first 2-3 games either. So that's kind of the same situation. I think both of those guys are as close as it gets.
Like the guys you can mention in the same breath as Jeremiah are Terrell, Parrish Johnson, Nick Bosa,
Maurice Claret.
In Orlando Pace. Like that's like the list he's on.
I change it. I think Maurice Claret's the best possible comparison. Yeah. And maybe that's a caution too, in terms of like what could possibly go wrong. Cause I mean, obviously, a lot of off the field stuff went wrong too, but it had nothing to do with football potential. Everybody saw who Maurice Claret was as a true freshman. And I think that was a guy that was on trajectory to be like potentially like best running back in Ohio State history before everything kind of went south. So,
dude, I'm juiced up about this. I'm getting excited talking right now. Yeah, I mean, I can't wait for the spring because, like, you know, he's gonna do something in the spring game that everyone else who's like, I know practice clips have circulated a lot, like they're getting crazy views and this stuff compared to other social media posts.
Yeah,
but it's still mostly Ohio State fans and some really plugged in national guys.
Yeah, somebody's when gonna. The spring game's broadcast on national TV. It's going to be on Fox.
Yeah, with Urban Meyer broadcasting.
Yeah. He's going to do something nuts. And yeah.
God damn. And like, I feel bad for the corners that are like also going against him in practice because everyone's
they're good too.
And that's the thing is like, you have four really good corners that we've seen play really good reps against like legit national competition.
This is
very good doing it. Yeah.
This is the best. The best secondary that I think might ever exist in Ohio State history, or at least has existed this far in Ohio State history. I think it's going to be, we can talk about that. Maybe you can talk about 2016. Maybe you can talk about 2019. Like, but I think this is right up there with those when you take corners and safeties and he's doing this in the spring against those guys.
He sure is. Yeah. And like, God damn. And it's also like, he's doing this with a rotation of four different guys getting QB1 reps. And it's still like every practice he's doing this. Like, we've seen Devin Brown throw a football. It's not very accurate most of the time. I'm juiced. I don't want to say it, but like, I think my expectations right now, this is probably so unfair. My freshman year expectations for Jeremiah Smith are junior year Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, not fair. Like, I think that's where I'm almost at too. Like, I think he's going to be like the target guy in the offense. And I think he's going to like, this is a 1,000-yard receiver. Like, he's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver. Maybe like a 1200 yard receiver. Like he's going to put up really, really big numbers as a true freshman. Like that's just the way it is. And he's going to get better as the season progresses. And maybe as there's a quarterback change and everything too. So I think we'll just drop that in there. I think that he is going to be absurdly good. And
That's the tweet I'm going to put out there to make people listen to this episode. Freshman year, Jeremiah Smith, the junior year, Marvin Harrison Jr. That if I tweet that, someone will click this for the first time.
I bet. Yeah.
All right. Do you want to talk about the O-line now or save it for the premium? What do you think?
We'll save it for the premium. I think we've talked a lot. I'm going to be mad about the offensive line. And there's a particular tweet from somebody that was the most engagement baity tweet I've seen of the entire
spring. Quoted that one.
I hit delete, you know, the delete button is undefeated and I was,
you're on nicer vacation. Than I am.
I was on vacation and I mostly just didn't want to deal with that. I was sitting on a beach and I was like, you know what? I'll let him have this. But there's an engagement baity tweet that we're going to talk about that was talking about Ohio State's offensive line. And we'll talk about that in the premium. But if you guys want to listen to the premium episode and you are not a subscriber to meetatmidfield.com, which we failed to mention is our website. You can subscribe to meetatmidfield.com and you will have the premium episode sent to your inbox. It's the second half of this episode. We are going to talk about the spring game a little bit, what we're going to see. We're going to talk about the offensive line. We're going to talk about the quarterbacks. We alluded to that a little bit. So if you want to sign up for our premium podcasts and our website, you get all sorts of, you get access to our board, which is, I think, the best board in college football. Least crazy. Well, crazy in a good way. We're still crazy. If you're posting on a message board, you have a certain level of, instability inside you. But I think that, ours is the least toxic in a good way. Come check us out. You'll like our boards.
And the most toxic in some others. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. In the good ways. We're toxic in the good ways, not toxic in the bad ways. So
that's right.
So come hang out. We also have some work we write on there. There's some premium articles and everything. I'm going to be publishing something on the quarterbacks, believe it or not, in the next day or two. So yeah, come hang out, and we'd love to have you. And we will see you all, hopefully, on the premium edition in just a few minutes.